Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 160. Guys, my book came out a couple months ago, and I am just now doing a reading and signing for it in Los Angeles at our Nerd Melt space. I know! It's 2 months old. It's probably not exciting anymore for anyone. If it ever was! But the point is, I am going to do a reading at Nerd Melt Monday, January 23rd, starting at 7:30. There's going to be a Q&A. There's going to be a signing afterwards. There's going to be a party. Farmer John is sending this big hot dog truck. It's a truck that serves hot dogs. It's not literally a truck made out of hot dogs, which would also be pretty awesome. Because you could just eat it. You could just roll. You could just like ride by and then just snack on the side of it in traffic, and then just keep going and be sated with delicious hot dogs. There's also going to be a little party and stuff, and it's going to be fun, you guys. So if you want to go to that, and it's before January 23rd, send an email to rsvp@inkprgroup.com. If his work schedule ends up permitting, I believe there might be a Wheaton there moderating the Q&A. So it is possible there could be Will Wheaton moderating the Q&A, if his work schedule permits, which we won't know till Monday. But there you go. Say, are you on Google Plus? I am. A lot. So find me on Google Plus. I'm just Chris Hardwick. I just made it easy. Chris Hardwick on Google Plus. Put me in your circle! And now the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 160, with our good friend, Mr. Graham Elwood. Graham Elwood!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I'm machined.
I worked for Rick Dees this time, so maybe that's...
So that was one of the Gulf Wars.
He's back! Rick Dees is back!
Disco Duck is back.
Yeah, he's doing a new one, Emo Duck.
Deesborns?
That's funny.
Deesborns, that's right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Graham Elwood, look at your Punchline Sacramento t-shirt.
How about it, guys?
Yeah.
Am I a road comic? Do I like a free t-shirt?
I don't know.
most of my t-shirts are comprised of free t-shirts.
All of them. Twice a year, I got to go through and...
Here, aim this. It's got to aim at your mouth like a gun.
There we go.
God, that's
these mics aren't great.
You've been to Afghanistan. You've had guns aimed at your face before.
My mouth.
That needs to aim at your mouth like a gun.
First of all, Graham Elwood on the Nerds Podcast is long overdue. I apologize. I love your show, Comedy Film Nerds,
that
you and Chris Mancini do, which I have done before. You guys,
it's great.
You are Comedy Film Nerds.
I haven't. I would have shit on something.
You have to get you have to get Myra on to shit on something. But you know what's been really impressive about you is in the last couple of years, you've really taken on the cause of like. You know, you went to Afghanistan to perform. You saw some shit there that you were like, this doesn't seem like what should be happening at all. And it's something that was really important to you. And I remember one of the first times you came back from performing in Afghanistan, you were really kind of shaken up about it.
It was, you know, and I'm always a little bit of a loss for words because it's so much. It's so overwhelming. The first time I went, I was asked by Mike Burton, as a comic out of Chicago, to go.
I know Mike.
Yeah. And he was like, hey, you want to go over there? And I heard some comics. This is summer of 2004. I'm like, yeah, you know, all right. Ever since 9/11, like a lot of people, I was like, I got to do more. You know, I felt like an asshole for just not participating enough or whatever. And I was like, yeah, let's go over there. And I had no idea what I was getting myself into. Absolutely no idea. And so that's kind of the documentary I made, Afghanistan. I just brought a camera because I was like, okay, let's see it. And I don't come from a military family. I have no military training, you know, which I'm probably surprising to you in a lot of
with those karate moves?
in this tight comedy club t-shirt, you would assume that I was a SEAL. And so it was like, it was crazy. And then the first trip was like, oh my God, was nuts. The first helicopter I was on started shooting at something.
Oh.
And then, you know.
For reals, or were they like, nah, we're just fucking with you?
Yeah.
So they have to get to business while they're transporting you.
Yeah, I mean, you're in a war zone. So there's two 30 cal machine guns sticking out of the window of the Black Hawk. So it's like.
Are you doing a tight five in the Black Hawk?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I'm doing a Black Hawk five. Yeah.
I see, I'm getting the gun. I'll just wrap this up with this last joke.
Forgot to do it over the radio, though, so no one could hear you.
Yeah, but we're going to do it again.
Farts are weird, right, guys?
No. Oh, men and women. Farts are weird.
Farts are weird. Men and women are different on the battlefield. I said, hang on a second.
Palm. What?
I said, palm.
Graze him.
You know when you wake up with a boner? Boom! I shot! I'm shot! That just sounds so, I mean, first of all, it's amazing to me that people every day, you know, put themselves in a situation like that for a cause that is greater than them. And whether or not whether or not someone supports the ultimate cause, the idea that people are devoted to committing their lives to something that they believe in is
that's the thing. Like it's not that I was completely like, not like my political views were suddenly 180 degree flip or anything like that, but you really go, you know, when you see it up close, these people, and again, regardless of if you are for, against, whatever, to see people who are like, I'm signing up, I'm going, it's an all-volunteer army. Like, I don't buy any of that when that in 04 or 05, they're like, oh, backdoor draft, bullshit. You signed up, if you sign up for the reserves in your contract, it says, guess what, friend, at any point, you're going somewhere.
If you were signing a contract, read some of the fine print about what can happen.
And you know, when you're in a 12-week boot camp learning how to shoot, they might ask you to actually use that. Yeah.
No. I fix planes.
No, they'll be like, what? They tricked me. No. Don't join the Marines, maybe. How's that sound?
Right.
Oh.
Do you start your sets with, I'm going to turn those Black Hawk frowns upside down?
Yes, okay, Jonah. That's exactly how I start every show. I'm gonna turn those.
So what was this? So what happened to you the first time that you?
Well, it's like I always put it this way. There's 50 things that happen to you in a day over there that any one of them on their own would be, you're never gonna believe what happened. That kind of a story, and so they just fly at you. The whole thing is just. Is overload. First of all, it's 11 and Afghanistan is 11 and a half hour time difference.
Oh, that alone. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's horrible. It's like you're used to going to bed at night, but then and now it's morning.
What do I do?
How did you do that?
They didn't have soy milk.
What?
It's horrible. I hate this place.
Guys, I need the iPhone prong. I need the iPhone prong.
There's no app at this base.
Can you
So the whole trip though. The whole trip, though, starts. My point is, you start just, you're tired, you're sleep deprived, everything's turned upside down just in terms of your physical well-being.
How long does it take to get to Afghanistan? And how many different, how do you get to Afghanistan?
Well, in this particular tour, we flew commercial to Frankfurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're stuck in Frankfurt for like a day or two, which is like my first taste of military hurry up and wait, where they're just like, nope, not getting on this plane. But I'm the comedian. We're here to, have a seat. We'll let you know, like, some shit went down or this, you know, we got to send medical guys, whatever.
So it's like standby. You're just on standby.
Yeah.
I would imagine a hardcore military person does not want a
pussy civilian.
No, they're so don't.
I need to get on this plane. I don't think you understand how important this is.
I'm tired. I just want to sit down.
I've hosted basic cable game shows. Perhaps you gentlemen.
Yeah, that's all, Cram. Sit down.
Yeah. Strip poker sucked. Sit down. So you fly commercial, then you're stuck in Frankfurt, and then you're in the military's care. And then we flew on a C-17, which is the biggest transport. It's like a jet, about 7 hours from Frankfurt to Kyrgyzstan. And it's this giant tube that can carry Humvees and tanks and shit.
Oh, so one with like the back of the plane goes down. It's like a ramp.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then there's like literally
where they just like shit people out and vehicles out at the
Beat it, comedy queer. And they kick you out the back. Right.
Learn to fly.
Hey, here's something funny for you.
Pull a right cord.
What did he say?
it was so, you know, and you're in this tube and there's the windows are literally about the, you know, like the size of a softball that you can see out. So you're in this weird tube flying in the middle of Central Asia. And then, so everything about it is just upside down and you just, everything's uncomfortable. And then you get to Kyrgyzstan and then
What was the movie?
The movie was, I think it was Training Day.
Oh.
No, it was Meet the Fockers.
Yeah, yeah. Heavily edited.
Under Siege 2. Edited, yeah.
Under Siege 2.
It was Fire Down Under, right?
Hey, I'm just the cook. I'm going to kill you in your own
Under Siege
kitchen.
2 is the train, right?
Was it?
I think
that
was the Under Siege 1.
No. Under Siege.
Oh, okay.
No, one of them was a boat, then a train.
Then a Greyhound bus, then
Then a
merry-go-round. They're just on a merry-go-round, and he's got to walk from one end of the merry-go-round to the other.
Then a series of pneumatic tubes in a bank.
Yeah, that's all.
They've been hijacked.
He manages to get
to... Pneumatic tubes have been hijacked in a bank from the 70s.
Are you freaked out at this point, or is there something about you that's like, well, you know, I'm with the military. It's probably okay.
At this point, in Kyrgyzstan... Like Frankfurt and Kyrgyzstan, I was like, wow. I was still in the like, man, this is going to be a crazy journey. And then when we land in Afghanistan, it's 3 a.m. And I'm just like, and then it was kind of hit me. I'm in Afghanistan and they just throw your bags on a pallet and there's this pile and there's rocks and everywhere. And it wasn't like I landed and I heard gah, 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 in the background or
anything.
Oh, could
you
like
not throw that down? My moisturizer's in there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had some like hippie face cream moisturizer. I was just so embarrassing. Yeah. It was so embarrassing. I think those trips have made me less of a Hollywood pussy. I'll say that. That's one place it's changed.
I would imagine.
I haven't noticed, but.
Well,
wait a minute. That sounded like an insult, Jonah.
I'm sorry.
So 3 a.m, you get to Afghanistan.
3 a.m, the guy's like, hey, I'm going to show you where you're sleeping. You're going to get a couple hours sleep, and then you're on a helicopter. So that's how it is now all of a sudden. And you get a couple hours sleep, and I was the first tour I was with Pete Johansson, and then we were talking to this kid, and he's got... and a lot of stuff is in the movie, and he's showing us his wound. I got shot, you know, and this is where the bullet went through my body armor, so it just nicked me. And I mean, and you're just like, then at that point, I was like, I'm in a war zone.
Yeah.
This is not a movie. This is not a joke. This is not, I'm not at a base in the States. This is like, you know, guys getting, and you say shit like, and you'd say stuff like crybaby civilian stuff like, God, I only got 4 hours sleep last night. And they're like, wow, lucky you.
Yeah.
Cause they're just like, you know, like if you watch Generation Kill, that was excellent. I mean, that was a hardcore specific unit about going in the initial invasion in Iraq, but in terms of the lack of sleep and stuff. And that's where it starts. You start talking to guys and, oh, this guy got shot and we got hit over here. And then the first helicopter ride I was on started shooting at something. And it's just like, I've never been on a helicopter. And the first one I was on was like, gah, 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 you know? And there's a gunner that's, you know, 3 feet from me and spent shells are hitting me in the face.
Whoa.
And I was just like...
Those are hot.
They're so sweet. Oh, you mean temperature.
It's got to be kind of a weird feeling, though. Just like, you know, is this guy shooting at people?
You're strapped into the, they just strap you in this, yeah. and then they're flying around doing their shit and they're just like, you know, they just strap you in the back and like, let us do our, shut up. Like you're just cargo.
Yeah. So stop it.
Yeah.
Stop.
Was there any part of you at that moment was like, all right, if I die right now, I feel like I might be okay with that because I'm doing something that I feel like is, you know, like I'm actually, I mean, it's obviously, right. You know, to go to Afghanistan and perform, to, you know, to bring comedy to people who put their lives at risk every day, you probably feel like, hey, what I'm doing is a little more important than what I would have been doing back home.
This first trip on all four, I was just too freaked out. I was just like, oh, we get to this base. I'm like, the second time I went in 06, which was even more intense. We saw even more intense stuff. I was on another helicopter that even got into a longer firefight, and we released flares, which is countermeasures, which I found out later is like, oh, that's when you're targeted by a rocket.
Oh!
So that could have been blown out of the sky. April 27th, 2006. Not that I've ever forgotten that. Wow. Not that that date's important to me.
Sure.
Should have yelled. Can't we just talk to them, guys?
Is that reasonable?
I've seen Albert Brooks's comedy in the Muslim world. I think I can figure this out.
Comedy in quotes.
Remember when that guy tried to reason?
Sorry, that's the film nerd in me. Yeah. Film nerd can't rest. Film nerd in me can't rest.
Remember the guy tries to reason with Hans Gruber and Die Hard? Like, yeah. Listen, Hans.
Hansi,
buddy. Listen, I got something you got.
That's my favorite cokehead in any movie.
He's a great cokehead.
And he was a director. He directed the movie High School High.
Oh, High School High.
Oh, he directed that?
Yeah, yeah. Hart Brockner or something like that.
You are a film nerd.
Yeah. Well, I was an extra on that movie. Cop number 12. You might remember me, Matt. Man. How are you?
Oh, that was great. I really like how you interacted with 9 and 13.
Well, that, there's a guy from like the Zucker Abrams.
Yeah. They were still doing the Zucker Abrams style in the 90s.
Was it Pat Proft? Because Pat Proft like branched off and did like, Pat Proft did like Real Genius, and like he branched off and did a couple of really great 80s comedies.
No, this was bad. This was bad, like Zucker style
ripoff.
Yeah, it was just basically they probably couldn't get Leslie Nielsen to be in this one, because that was like when Leslie Nielsen was doing Spy Hard,
right?
And like, there was a couple 96. Other just like, you know. Like, he took the Zucker acting stuff to, like, other movies.
Okay.
Yeah, this was 96, like, 90, my first year in L.A.
Halle Berry, right? Isn't she in that?
Oh, God, she might have been. It was John Lovitz, and, yeah, might have been.
It was, yeah, and it was a parody of...
all those movies, like Juice and...
The Dangerous Minds.
Dangerous Minds. Yeah, it was a spoof
Stand
of
Stand and Deliver.
Yeah, of all those, like, in the hood... school gang movies. Yeah. It was spoofing that. So, anyway,
yes.
To answer your question.
Anyway, 2006, Afghanistan. 2006. Yeah, yeah. They released flares.
So we're targeted.
The release of High School
in
High.
The
That's
sky,
how I remember it.
Seconds away from death. Oh, but do you know who played the janitor in Zapped? Was Scatman Crothers. Yeah. Wait, what the fuck?
Scatman Crothers. Also in The Shining. Yeah, so the second time I was, my second trip over there, in that particular helicopter ride, I did have this epiphany of we had just done that trip was with Shema Tosh, and we had just done a base the night before in Jalalabad.
This sounds like you made that up.
It did.
It sounds like a comedy town.
It is. Jalalabad. What do you guys? Yeah. Is this the funny bone of Jalalabad?
It was Jalalabad, and then it goes Walla Walla, Washington.
And a one-nighter in Jalalabad over here.
Is that what I'm doing? What was the next night? Were you at Taliban's?
Was it? And Kyrgyzstan?
What was that show on the Al Jazeera network? Go. That was one where actually, Chris, I did have that moment. We had just done a show the night before, and we got into a 45-minute firefight. And I was.
It was an hour with commercials.
I TiVo'd it. So that was one where I was like, okay, well, last night I did a show in front of a bunch of Marines at this small little outpost. My family knows I love them. Maybe this is my day. Maybe, and if I die somewhere in Afghanistan, I will have died a noble death. I mean, literally, that was all I could do because I had no control over the situation. There's nothing I can do.
Right.
And I was like, all right, man. You know, and I came back from that one and, you know, we saw some kids getting operated on and stuff. And there was coffins on our returning C-17 back in Kyrgyzstan. And it was just like, you know, Shema tells a story. We basically sleep in the same tent every night where I had some like nightmare in the middle of the night. And she's like, Graham. And I was like, what? She's like, are you all right? I was like, oh, fuck, that was crazy.
And
I dreamed I was in Afghanistan. Oh my God, I'm here.
Don't worry, you're safe in
yeah, rack zoom.
Here in good old 1955.
So it was that was one of those experiences. When I came back from that one is when I was like, I had all this footage and I was like, we just got to get this movie made. And I sort of kind of unplugged that's probably when you might have talked to me, when I was just sort of floating around. And
You said, I remember specifically some of the stories you were telling that, you know, that there were, there was a lot of suicide watch on the space. You said there were a lot of people whose tours got extended and were just like, you said these soldiers just on the phone sobbing to their relatives saying like, I don't want to be here anymore and we have to be here. And you said that you were supposed to perform in sort of a remote base.
Oh, this was the 07.
And they wouldn't let you because it was, they were going to let you and someone else was like, you probably don't want to go on that. And then, so you said, I'm just going to perform on the base here for everyone. And some, you know, like some official was like, nah, you can't. You're like, yeah, but I'm here. They want a show. Can I just perform here? Nope. There's no paperwork.
Oh, man. God. Yeah. I haven't told this story, but that was in 07. We went back and there was four of us on this trip. And the guy who set the tour up goes, Graham, you know, none of these people have ever been before. This is your third time. So you're sort of in charge of it. And we got there and I was anticipating like the prior two trips of flying to just about every base and only taking maybe one brief little caravan. And we get there and they're like, now all the aircraft is being used. So you guys are gonna have to drive in I don't know why I'm blanking on the term, not caravan, but
convoy.
Yes. There's a convoy.
We got a great big convoy. Ain't she a beautiful sight?
Put the hammer down. Great Chris Christopherson movie from the 70s.
Yes, I remember Convoy.
It Can't Stop. Great movie.
When trucking for some reason in the 70s was like really, because you had your Smokey and the Bandit, then you had your, you know, your Cannonball Run series later on.
It was
all
because of CBs.
Yeah, it was because of CBs.
Yeah. What was that? And bikers became, they were like, they're cool. No, these are fucking meth-head rapists. This is horrifying. These guys aren't cool.
Convoy could have been called Meth-Head Rapist Train.
Just like, oh, we're going to pick up runaways at rest stops and their bodies are never going to be found. These guys are great.
Convoy.
Looks like we got ourselves a convoy.
Breaker 19, I got a deposit of dead fish, which means you have to get rid of a body.
Who wants some human trafficking? Convoy.
Breaker. We got a
breaker. Got some blood diamonds working on in. What? These guys are awful people. Oh, now they coach at Penn State.
I got some.
Anyway.
Hey.
So yeah, that trip. So they said you guys are going to convoy everywhere, and I was like, okay. Two of the comics were like, I am not comfortable with this. Nobody said about doing all, because this was 07. So a lot of the resources from Afghanistan had already been diverted to Iraq. The escalation in Iraq was, we were at about 180,000 troops at that time in Iraq. There was only about 30-some thousand in Afghanistan at the time. So Afghanistan was spread very thin. And, you know, because of the two wars and everything, the enlistment was down. So that was actually, you were right, that was when they extended people's tours without really telling them. They just said it's 12 to now 15 months.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just like, what? Like, I've done everything for this country. Now they're giving me an extra 3 months. So tensions were high and resources were very limited in Afghanistan. So this guy who was a DOD contractor was like, no, man, this is it. And so two comics were like, we don't feel comfortable with this. And this other comic, Adam Hammer, was like, Graham, we got to go, we got to do this. You know, I've never done this. I feel bad. I was like, all right, Adam, well, I'm sort of responsible for you. And then we talked to this DOD guy and he was kind of a dick about it. And he was just like, look, man, I don't care. I'll send you. And like, I can't remember what he said, but he said a couple things that I was like, you are not making me feel safe at all. You know? And I'm like, are you going on these convoys with us? No. And he was just, he was kind of a dick. And the other two were like, the other two comics were like, we're not doing this. Flat out, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, I'll send you guys home because we get paid a little bit of money, not a lot.
Sure.
Like less than what you would make on the road.
Sure.
And so they were like, he's like, well, then you guys won't get paid. And we were just like, so this is about money? Like we're not here for money. And then I just thought about it and I just said, if I say yes to this and something happens to Adam, then I'm responsible and I couldn't live with myself.
Yeah.
So I said, we're not going to do this. But I said, we'll do shows on the base for free. And he was like, nope. And So we were just walking around the base, and that's when I was in the phone center and listening to guys. One guy slams down the phone. He's like arguing with his girlfriend or wife, and he's crying and he's fighting. And it's just like, and this other guy's like, they keep fucking extending our tours. And I was like, you know, so it was brutal because IEDs were getting more and more. Al-Qaeda was moving to Afghanistan because they knew there was less there. So they were bringing, when I was there in 04 and 06, IEDs weren't that big of an issue. They were a big issue in Iraq. But 07, they started to become a big issue. So everyone was terrified about convoys. And I probably would have done it had it just been me, or the other comics would have said, yeah, let's all do it. But I didn't, and it was brutal. And I came back, and it was, you know, one of the more tougher decisions I've had to make in my life. But going over there is like, I sort of unplugged from Hollywood a little bit, and was like, I stopped auditioning for hosting stuff, and
doesn't seem as important anymore.
It was really hard. I remember
you come back from Afghanistan and they give you sides. You're like, all right, who's gonna answer which cards are in the deck today?
And then everything was switching over to reality shows too. Like game shows were kind of fading, and everything was, so it was like even worse. It was just like, well, who's gonna date this whore, you know, or whatever.
And do you come back into America, and do you feel like that there is? There's just sort of a sheen that's gone, where you're like, you guys don't fucking have any. And you hear someone arguing about a latte in a Starbucks or whatever, and you're like, you fucking people don't have any goddamn clue.
It's anytime a comic has come to me who said, hey man, I was offered to go do a show overseas, Graham, and I know you've gone, what do you think? And I said, don't go unless you're ready to be changed fundamentally as a person, because you come back, and that's exactly right. Part of me was like, oh, I'm so glad I'm back in America. It's so nice. Everything's so nice. The running water and everything's comfortable. But then you do see that. It is hard to care, because America, for all of its problems, is Disneyland.
Sure.
It's fucking Disneyland, man. And especially when you've seen a war-torn third world country like Afghanistan. I mean, Iraq had an infrastructure, and while Iraq is certainly not perfect, Afghanistan is hundreds of years behind. I mean, hundreds of years. Kabul, the largest city, the capital, its sewer system is an open trench. Shit. So there's a shit creek that goes through downtown Kabul.
They're probably still on dial-up too, right?
Oh, God, it's horrible.
That was the original name for Dawson's Creek.
Shit creek.
Yeah. They didn't get ESPN too. I'm like, these guys are dicks. So you come back and you do hear someone complaining about a latte. Or you hear yourself go, oh, I don't get cell phone coverage. And you're like, wait a minute, dude. Like, I've stopped myself.
I don't. I would never complain about it. You're right. I mean, who would do that? I mean, who would do that, Graham?
When would the Nerdist complain about technology? I mean, that would never happen.
You know, just because. I mean, look, you probably have a better chance of getting AT&T coverage in Afghanistan than America. Oh. But that's fine. I'm not complaining about that.
Hey-o.
I'm just saying.
If they don't get the new iPhone in Afghanistan,
I mean, listen, I make jokes, but I have a tremendous amount of respect for what you did, because I mean, I honestly, I have had that thought many times, like, would I go if they, and you know, I'm sad to admit that I've sort of been relieved that no one's asked, that I haven't had to make the decision, because part of me would be like, you gotta go. Like, you have to. I mean, like, these
if
people
you're asked,
are.
You gotta go.
You gotta go. But then the other part would be like, what are you doing? You're a pussy.
It is. I mean, there is no bullshit over there. It is life and death. And yes, here, there's always that sort of. It's sort of almost like a theory, like, oh, any of us could die any day, which is true, but it's not so in your face.
Not by fucking mortar fire, or, you know, like, you might get hit by a bus.
Yeah.
But but you could also win the lottery. Like,
exactly.
There's no lottery in Afghanistan.
No.
Lots of buses. Yeah. Lots of buses.
The lottery in Afghanistan is like the short story, The Lottery, where you might get shit thrown at you to death.
I mean, I remember being in Iraq in Thanksgiving of 07, and I was sitting outside. It was the end of the tour, and we were staying at one of Saddam's former palaces. So I'm staying in a palace. It was really weird. Iraq is a completely different ballgame, because it's like there was money and an infrastructure there. And all of a sudden, you hear vroomp off in the distance, and then all over the loudspeaker, incoming.
Oh,
seat
fuck.
Cover. And then I heard literally over my head. And I was like, that noise, like, was one of the more, I felt so powerless and terrified. And I was like, oh, I get PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
I get guys coming back here just being like fucking jumpy and like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like, I mean, because I've definitely felt that.
If you have to be in that mode constantly and you're accessing those very deep centers of your brain, like the most basic survival, I'm not ever safe. I mean, I don't know how you, I don't know how anyone shakes that off.
I'm so, my, and one of the things, like, I'm hoping that this, you know, this movie, I don't know, I didn't make it to get famous, but I'm hoping that that people at least, I just hit your mic.
That's all right.
Your mic was talking shit. Put it in its place.
So Mike is our intern.
Come on, guys. So it was, you know, I'm concerned about the percentage of PTSD of soldiers coming back. You know, we're talking about hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people who've been deployed over the last 10 years. And because I'm like, if I've 2 weeks of telling dick jokes and I'm a little high strung or I'm a little freaked out, a year of deployed especially in a forward base, if you're infantry.
Yeah.
I mean, it's rocket attacks and gunfire every fucking day, man. And seeing friends die. And I've had so many soldiers come up and talk to me. When you do shows over there, you always see some kid hanging around and you're like, now I've been over it enough to go, okay, I know I need to talk to this guy. And they start telling you, and then they're, oh man, we had a bad day last month. And you hear the stories and it's like, it's amazing. And like, and a lot of credit needs to be given in terms of comics. I always got to mention Scott Kennedy has been over there like 50 times.
Oh, I know Scott.
Yeah. He was going over there. He had two nephews who were in the Marines who were in the initial invasion, and he got emails and stuff from them about what they were going through. And he's like, all right, I got to go do shows. And so the three times I've been to Iraq has been with Scott. And so we've heard the stories that they tell you, man, the stuff that they've been through themselves, and getting back to the PTSD thing, it's a real issue. And you know, there's this difficult situation that the military has in the sense that if you say you've got PTSD, sometimes you get special duty or extra pay. So there's guys juking the system, and then a lot of guys that act, and women as well, men and women who really have it, then are like, you know, suck it up.
Yeah.
So it's this really like, how do you know? You know, and I've heard some infantry guys go, I thought PTSD was bullshit until I saw this, or my friend, or I had this reaction, you know, because that's the military, especially infantry, is suck it up.
Yeah.
You had an hour. I don't give a shit what you're, let's go. It's game on. And so no one wants to talk about it, and I believe it's a very small percentage of people that are juking the system, but there's a big thing of it's hard. You don't talk about it. So when you go over there as an entertainer, they talk to you because you're not in the military. You're not a journalist. You're this funny civilian that just eased up their day for a little bit, and then they tell you stuff, and it's like, and then after shows in the States, because I talk about it a little bit here, I've had numerous soldiers and families and come up to me, and people with prosthetic limbs, and, oh, I lost my son or daughter over there. It's like such an intense, it's permeated every aspect of my life.
I've known you for a long time, and I've seen you go from like quick joke telling style to just going up on stage at Comedy Death Ray, now Comedy Bang Bang, but in the old Comedy Death Ray days, and literally just like punching the mic stand and fucking around, almost not even saying anything, and people just fucking folded over laughing for 15 minutes straight.
If there's a stool, there's going to be a standing ovation.
Thunderstrike, or whatever you say.
Palm strike. Thunderstrike.
Is that a...
Thunderstrike. That's awesome. Thunderstrike.
But, you know, palm strike. You know, so how has, first of all, I want to know how this has changed your comedy. And second of all, I want to know what a typical show is like
over there.
Yeah.
Well, and to answer the question about how it changed my comedy specifically, one of the things that fueled me going to Death Ray and just being like, fuck it, I'm going to just go on stage and go crazy, was I came back from those, like right when Death Ray, the M-Bar and everything was blowing up, was 04.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there in 04 and 06 and 07. So right in that time period when it was really the alternative scene was, all those shows were getting big. And I just was sort of, I enjoyed being an entertainer, but also, you know, like we were talking about, I come back in Hollywood and, oh man, this is a big showcase, and I don't fucking care, you know. And comics, you know, they've got their set list, and hey, that's great. That's how you want to work. And you know, I just see comics reading their set list or taking themselves too seriously, and I was just like, I have seen war. You paid $5 to get into this show. I've seen people, you know, and it's young people in their young 20s, and I appreciate them coming out to the show, but it's like, The last show I did in front of people in your young 20s, they all had fatigues and weapons. So you Hollywood kid with a t-shirt and a scarf on, I'm going to terrify you. You know, like, I'm going to challenge you a little bit in a fun way. But when some of those audiences would be like a little too judgmental, in my opinion, like, well, you know, we're hipsters and we'll laugh. And I saw some comics be like, oh, shit, I hope this crowd doesn't. And I was like, you're worried about this crowd?
I hope they don't write bad things about me on the message boards.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna threaten their lives. So that's kind of what my approach was like. I'm not scared of you, Hollywood hipsters and message boards.
Right.
I've had rockets shot at me, so it's kind of game on. And it was all in fun, and it was playful, and it was also like, you do come back with all this like raw, crazy emotion, and that was like one place where I'm like, I can just let this out. Mm-hmm. Like, and the fact that the audience actually loved it was so much fun.
Well, I think what those audiences, I think what they respond to is, you know, at least some form of honesty in a performance. And I feel like, you know, like with the hipster crowd, or with that, the comedy nerd crowd, I guess I should say, not necessarily the hipsters, but with the hipsters don't like anything. But with the comedy nerd crowd, I think they just want to see honesty. And so right. I think that's why they respond badly to standard, like if when sure. people come in and talk to them like they're a club,
yeah, if it's a, they're, yeah. you're doing
then people
act.
See through it and they're like, okay, you're not being honest right now. Yeah, and I can sense that you're just reciting a bunch of lines that you memorized.
They can tell that they're not really in that room even. It might as well be a hologram.
But
they're doing their act that they could be anywhere.
I think you can do anything pretty much and say anything within that small little cluster of the comedy community. I think they just want to see
you.
Honesty. They just want to see you being, you know, saying something that you care about or doing. And so, you know, when you go up there and you're actually expressing this raw emotion, which is coming from a very real place, then I think it reads as like, oh fuck yeah. I mean, this is something that
this guy is
just
nuts.
It just has that. It just has that organic quality that you can't intellectualize it. It just has that thing because it's coming from that place.
Well, yeah, and I do agree with you, and I want to, you know, I know there's a lot of comedy nerds listening to the show, and I do appreciate that aspect of those shows of like, if it's honest, I was always sort of critical of some of those shows, but I did have so much fun, and I do love, I haven't performed there in a while, but like you say, the fact that if you're just being honest, then they do love it, and I do like the fact that those shows and the crowd wanting honesty motivated a lot of comics to challenge themselves because, you know, you do a lot of road and sometimes you can just sort of fall into a, you know, I got two shows on Friday, two shows on Saturday. I'm going to go up there.
Yeah, you go into autopilot a little bit because that's kind of how you survive those because it is such a tremendous amount of energy to, you know, to be on stage 2-3 hours a night and really kind of directing the, you know, the crowd. Obviously, you're not having rockets shot at you at the, you know, at Acme in Minneapolis, but it's still, or at least I hope not.
Words can hurt just as much.
Yeah. Guys, don't fire word rockets at me.
Word rockets.
That's a word rocket.
Can we just get out of our emotional Blackhawk for a second and just all talk like people?
Word rocket man.
Our emotional Blackhawk.
Yeah. So what were these typical shows like, at, you know, when you're going to these remote bases?
Well, you know, you always do some big bases, and the big bases are big fun shows. And the small bases are a whole nother thing. And I love doing the small bases more because I've done shows. I mean, you do some shows, you're standing on a flatbed truck in front of 25 guys. Mm-hmm. Or they're standing. They don't have a place to sit. Like I did one show, and this is in the documentary too. It was under the small base Terrencout in the south of Afghanistan. It was hot. It was like 105 degrees. And there's like a...
But a dry heat.
It's great. and there's like, yeah, there's an inch and a half of like moon dust, basically. That's on everything. It covers everything. And the base was in their quote unquote mess hall, which was a camo netting tent outside with tables that they stood at. They didn't sit when they ate. And you're doing the show standing on a table, and if we were lucky, we'd have a microphone plugged into like one little speaker. If we were lucky. There's plenty of shows I did without. And then you're doing shows, and there's at the smaller bases, it's mostly infantry. You get those guys with that 1,000-yard stare.
Yeah.
That are just like, they're sitting there with their arms folded. And not arms folded like some dick at the Columbus funny bone, like, is this guy funny? Mm. But arms folded, like, I've just been through an amazing amount of shit. I haven't slept in 30 hours, and I can't even, they're just looking right through you, man.
Yeah.
Because they're literally, those hardcore infantry guys are like, if you're not in my unit, I don't know who the fuck you are, and I do not care.
Right.
And you're performing for them, and the first couple times I did it, I was like, it was an adjustment. I didn't know how to communicate with them. And again, this is part of what the
and certainly you can't blame them for that.
Not at all. I just feel like an asshole. I'm like, I'm this fucking pussy Hollywood dick. Yeah. You know, like, what you guys like? What you watch this in the news? What?
Start yourself with, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and you know, you feel like you're not doing enough, and you feel like, God, I felt like such a baby or whatever. And so, but then the small bases. Then they come up and all the soldiers thank you at every base, which is an amazing thing. They're thanking you, and it's such a humbling. You're really like, really? Like, you carry a gun. I'm leaving in 5 days. You know what I mean? I'll be back in L.A., you know, bitching about my lattes and my cell coverage.
Right.
And but then they thank you. And like, and that one base, that first, like, Tarancout, that, and then they lined up and all of them shook our hands. Like, whether they even thought it was funny or connected or whatever, they were just like, hey, thanks. Like, the fact that you would come out to the middle of nowhere. And the first ever, I think they're like challenge coins or whatever. Like, each unit has like a really nice coin, and the commanding officer will give that to you in a handshake. And they do it to soldiers who've done like something amazing, and you might get one or two in a 20-year career. And then, so the first one I ever got was from the 25th Infantry. And I'm like, you guys are giving me a medal? What? And it's the most inspiring and humbling thing altogether, because they're thanking you, and you're just like, for a job that I don't know that I would sign up to do what they do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so those shows are amazing. And I mean, the last base I just did in January of this year, I was in Iraq. We did Camp Gary Owen, which is 300 meters from the Iran border. And we had maybe 120 soldiers. And there's probably about 35 or 40 in this little tent. And most of them, that's the other thing about the small bases. If it's infantry, they're mostly like 18 to 25.
Whoa.
The bigger bases, you got a lot more career people and stuff like that. But I mean, 18 to 25 year olds. And they're like, first time away from home. Oh, my first comedy show ever was watching you
Jesus
guys,
Christ.
You know, without a microphone in a tent in a mess hall.
But I can imagine that it probably, you know, and again, I don't presume to understand anything about what this is like. But when I think about, well, if I were in that situation, any connection I had to home would be a very welcome. So to have you come over and have these guys come over and feel an actual connection to my home, I would probably be pretty overwhelmed by that, I'm guessing.
It's the coolest thing. Like, the laughter and their response. And, you know, I mean, you got to go really dirty, too, which is great, though. And, you know, you're making jokes about whacking off, because they're doing a lot of that. You know what I mean?
Is there any stuff that they say you can talk about? Like,
well,
it's
the only
like,
thing they ever said was, you just can't make fun of the president.
That's it?
Like, he's the commanding officer. He's the chief.
But like that's it. There's no. It's like you know, sex stuff will get him riled up too much, or
no.
Talking about like drinking will make him miss drinking and get.
No, huh? I mean one base. You know, Scott Kennedy told a story. He was at one base, and the commanding officer was a very he was very like devout Christian, and he was like, Scott, I don't want dirty language and this, that, and the other thing. And Scott, you know, handled it very well. He goes, look, sir, it's your base. I'll do whatever you want. But just so you know, I just want you to know I've done a lot of these shows, and I'm here for the enlisted guys. And I'm just here to, you know, I think it's for them. I'm doing the show for them. You know, and Scott basically had this great conversation with the guy and got the guy to go, all right, I see your point. And so that was one instance. But
sir, I am curious. Why do you think Bush is on God's dick all the time? What? The fuck? Get the fuck!
Like, you just hear fucking, just fucking lock and load. Yeah.
You just everything at once. Yeah.
You just look down and just see red laser dots on you, just bouncing around.
Glowing red, solid red. How many lasers?
Yeah, I don't know. He wandered off the base and
so many bullets hit him at once. He never existed.
It's like he walked into a wall of bullets.
I don't know what happened. I guess he was Taliban.
Oh my God.
But yeah, like content, they don't, you know, and it's.
I mean, yeah, these guys are getting shot at every day. There's probably very little you can say. Yeah. They're going to be like, hey, come on.
What are you going to offend them with? You right. know what I mean? Yeah. I've made a personal choice of I'm not going to really get into my personal politics. I'm fairly liberal in a lot of my politics, but I was like, they don't need to hear this shit. They're living it.
Well, first of all, you know what I mean? First of all,
politics out there, though.
They don't, they don't need to be any more mentally challenged. Yeah. Well, I don't mean mentally. What did you say? Do you remember what you said to make that guy smile?
I don't know. Whatever thing from my act. I think I went just.
Beaverful.
Yeah, I said the Beaverful song. I don't know. I did whatever dick joke I could pull out. Haha, get it? Yeah, it was amazing. And then the platoon leader was or unit leader, I guess, was a woman, and she was like, you know, cleaning her nails with this vicious fucking Marine knife. And then she's like, you know, Johnson, pop smoke, and he pops a smoke canister. And then we hop out of the Humvee and we rode in an Osprey, which is they're a fixed wing aircraft where the propellers go and they can land like a helicopter.
Yep.
So that thing drives and me, and then it's like, it's super loud. It's like out of a movie. And they're like, hey, thanks for coming to the show. You're like, you got it. And then you jump.
Are you on Facebook? Can I sign up for your mailing list?
At Graham Elwood on Twitter. So then you get in this thing and then you fly away and they're flying with the back door down.
The back door, the bay door.
That bay door is down and the base just gets smaller and you're just like, probably never going to see these guys again.
Jesus Christ.
And it was just like, and every show is that intense. Like this, that kind of experience where you shake someone's hand and you look them in the eye and you're like, maybe never going to see him again. It's unbelievable. I'm so honored I got to go over there. And I had a very emotional experience when they were talking about the Iraq war ending. I'm glad that it's over. And it just brought up all this stuff. And I'm very fortunate I got to go there. I don't know if I'm ever going to get to go to Iraq again. I hope that country rebuilds itself. I hope I can visit it as a tourist in 20 years. I mean, there's commercial flights to Hanoi. I hope I get to go to Baghdad as a tourist someday. Yeah. It's, you know, and I want to go to Afghanistan, but because of a lot of downed aircraft that happened over the summer, they're sort of limiting a lot of the tours, the entertainment over to Afghanistan, which, like, I hope I get to go there soon, so...
So is this all in, is this the Afghanistan DVD?
The Afghanistan, actually, it's a pay what you think is fair download.
Okay.
You can get it at comedyfilmnerds.com. And so you can get it for as cheap as a penny. And because I just want people
that's
to see
not
it.
Fair. That's come not on, fair. Guys. Pony up a little bit more.
Yeah. At least a nickel. So yeah, I just want people to see it. And I've been starting to do some free, I have on schedule to start doing some free shows at bases. Here in the States, like when I'm performing in some town, I'll just add on a free show at a base just to do more of that stuff. So it's yeah.
Have you already inquired about doing bases in Hawaii just so you can go
I'm
surf?
I'm doing Schofield Base December 3rd, bitch. Going to be surfing all week.
Air Force Base.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But the best beach is on the Kay Bay, the Marine Base in Kaneohe.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to get that.
Base. Yeah, North Beach.
I'm trying to get that.
Yeah. So, big surfer, this guy.
Big surfer.
Loves it. Seven. But you're in good, Graham, you're in good shape. I always say that. That Graham Elwood, look at those guns.
You like it? You want a taste?
Yeah. I don't know if I want a taste.
I do.
I do. Matt does.
You do want a taste. Okay, I got two meals for you. Yeah, lunch and dinner. Hello. That's all you can eat, bitch.
You finish that, you get dessert.
Bam.
Bam, pointing at balls.
It's an audio podcast.
We have to.
Dick on your face. That's it.
Dick on your face.
Just a dick on your face.
So some crazy stories about all those kids out in the war zone. Tell us about your movie podcast.
Well, you guys, both of you have been on it. Matt will have you on it. I'm sure there's many film nerd fans that listen to your guys' show.
It's a great podcast.
It's a blast. It's like, and this is the thing, and I know you know this, I love having this conversation with other podcasters. Like, podcasting has been so cool for all us comics to just say whatever we want. Do whatever we want. And Chris Mancini and I are just like, we just like talking about movies.
I think that goes back to what Chris was saying about, like, just the complete honesty, like that people like to see comics being honest. And what more, you can't get more honest than just a comic or two well, on a microphone by
also,
themselves.
Yeah, and also, but you know, with stand-up, there's a very, obviously there's a very specific structure that you have to get that honesty out. There's a very specific way that you have to present that material. I mean, everyone's a little bit different, obviously. I mean, I feel like an idiot explaining how fucking stand-up works. But I mean, just the idea of podcasts is you can just talk. You can just talk and you don't have to worry about like, all right, you know, there's like 30 seconds where there's no beat in there and I have to like build in so it just carries through because people are staring at me from the audience, you know.
But there seems to be a lot of people that just want to hear, you know, comics just talk in general.
Yeah.
Because, again, no, you know, you're right. It is the honesty. And I've had this conversation with like numerous people like Marin and Pardo and stuff. And I think Greg Barrett, like they're hearing us talk honestly. They know we're not being filtered by a network or whatever, you know what I mean? Advertisers or studio or anything like that. It's going, oh, you can't say that. We're saying whatever we want. And they're, you know, we all have our opinions and our rants, and I think they love that shit.
Well, what I love about podcasting is that, you know, all those times you sit backstage at shows or at like UCB or shows in New York, like, and comics are just hanging out and you're just talking about shit. I mean, comics, you know, almost more than any other profession, it is the job of the comedian to dissect things. And so that's all we do backstage is just fucking take shit apart and figure it out and open shit up and try to, you know, do you feel this way about this? Did you think this? And then what about this? And, you know, and then, I mean, that's all it is. And so that's why I think, you know, I think a lot of comics are some of the most interesting people that I enjoy talking to because they're very well versed at expressing themselves. I'm not saying that they're any more intelligent than anyone else, but it's just that some people don't have the skill set to to express those things in quite that way.
That's exactly it. It's we say the things that everyone's thinking, you know, that a lot of people are thinking, but maybe haven't quite, like you said, gotten the thought into a cohesive
or just articulated it in a certain way or
pussy like, fart. That's yep. just
pussy
an example.
Finally,
exactly.
Someone had the courage. You're very brave.
Yeah, I was in my head. I was like, quaff or kawoof or no, I couldn't figure it out. And then you made it, put a bow on it.
Pussy fart.
And then, but like Lenny Bruce said it, he goes, we all, you know, comics have to have a built-in bullshit detector. That's our other thing too, is we all kind of go, what the? Wait a minute. Like that's a big part of any comedian's, whatever your style is there's some aspect of you looking at something and going, who's the asshole that did that? You know,
what's the genius that came up with that ad campaign?
Who were the ad wizards?
Who's the McGriddles?
Stand up and win. Was that stand up and win?
I think so. Yeah, yeah.
Stand up and win.
That was a SNL, the Seinfeld game show that they did like in the 90s. Right. Like stand up and win. Who are the ad wizards? And everyone was doing Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which apparently that's what the scene was like back in the day.
I would imagine it would be. Comedy is definitely, and that's why it's so fascinating to me to look back at guys in the 80s during the comedy boom, you know, who were actually doing insanely honest stuff. I mean, you know, guys like Bill Hicks and Dana Gould and Carlin and, you know, who weren't just up there to be like, look at me, I'm a dancing monkey, I'm going to distract you so you buy chicken wings, you know? Yeah. Like, they actually were.
I was watching a Young Comedian
or
special.
Emo.
Fucking Emo. Emo's awesome.
God damn, is he funny.
So good.
His fucking jokes. He is such an amazing joke writer.
Yeah.
You get mad when you're listening to Emo Phillips's jokes because he starts with a premise and you're like, all right, I probably, and then he comes from an angle where you're like, where the fuck did you get that from?
I know.
Like, and at the same time going, you're fucking dark. You're fucking crazy.
I know. Don't let his wacky voice fool you. He is a smart and very dark dude.
Yeah.
Like, God, his shit is so great. I love listening
to
him.
What was the one joke he did at FYFS where it was like, I was on a date with the girl and she got angry when I didn't open the car door for her, but I was just too busy swimming to the surface.
That's an awesome joke.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's so great. And you think it's going to be this, it's like you said, Chris, it starts out as this like, oh, it's the men and women are different.
Yeah.
No, letting his girlfriend die.
Yeah.
He drove into a lake.
And he does it like the weird, it's like he's trying to make people uncomfortable. He's like, there's a lot of that, breathing through his teeth.
I'm sure I've said it on the show before, but I fucking love his joke. And he does some of the darkest and most academic jokes where he says, He was at his nephew's birthday party, and they had brought the cake, and then he was like, Uncle Emo, I want to make a wish, I want to make a wish. So I picked him up by his feet and swung him around, and he went, wish, wish, to teach him the dangers of homonyms. Did you just write a homonym joke?
I opened for him once at the Melrose Improv. His audience was so smart. I was like, wow, every little, like, you have little throwaway references that most of the crowd doesn't get, and you just put them in there for yourself or the comics. The whole audience was laughing at every little thing in my act because his crowd, the people that were just come out to see him, you have to be smart to get that shit. To think a homonym joke is funny.
Yeah, there were a couple guys in the 80s that you would look at and you would go like, oh, fuck, they're operating in a whole different plane. Obviously, Stephen Wright. But then also, Charlie Fleischer was fucking... Like, that guy was a goddamn math genius.
Yeah.
And I would, you know, I would see him perform in the later parts of when he I don't think he still performs, but he might.
I don't know.
But just sort of, you know, the last few times I saw him perform, he just sort of seemed sort of resigned to the idea of, like, it was at the Laugh Factory, and it was just like, all right, I know what you guys, you know.
Yeah. All right.
But a guy who would craft an entire bit, weave in crowd work, and then tie it all together in some insane mathematical way at the end, you know.
It was, the 80s was an interesting time, you know what I mean? You had, because it was becoming so profitable, and all you had to do was hang up a sign that said comedy, and you could pack a place anywhere. So it bred the shticky, hacky 80s comics that we all make fun of. But then, as is always the case, there was still a handful of people who were really smart and original. Like, even Bobcat, like, I never liked Bobcat's stage persona, but his jokes, like,
yeah,
he's such a good, I really liked his joke writing, you know what I mean? Like, and recently seeing him perform, his stage persona, he barely does. He does it just enough, and it's the perfect mix now. You know, because back in the 80s, you kind of had to
be loud.
You had to be big and loud, and you had to have some sort of gimmick almost to stand apart from the banjo guys and the what's up with that, man? You know, like those the comic ash
the cats,
guys.
The comedy cats,
the, you know, the McGrib guys or whatever. That's why they're still doing it. I mean, even like Judy Tenuta, she gets a bad rap
fucking
a lot.
Fucking love Judy Tenuta.
Her fucking jokes are fucking great.
She was phenomenal. Yeah.
That's a trio right there of very like progressive, but also doing characters on top of good jokes. Judy Tenuta, Bobcat, Emo.
But the idea that Emo and Judy Tenuta were a couple, it still blows my mind.
Yeah. Which is a fact that Blanka Patch loves to harp on.
Yeah.
For the rest of his life. Judy Tenuta.
I loved Judy Tenuta. She was another one that was like, making fun of the construct. Yeah. Like, it's the same sort of like C. Martin Wilde and Crazy Guy thing. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, you can appreciate the jokes on the surface level if you want, but there's also that level of they're rebelling against the boom. They're rebelling against the standardized performer boom and fucking with it and basically saying, like, this is dumb. And, like, what we're doing up here is ridiculous.
And the other thing, too, like, they got bad raps because the people that didn't get that they were sort of flipping the finger at it helped make them very popular and make them, you know, successful. So a lot of comics were like, oh, they're bullshit gimmick acts. You know, they're just got some stupid stage character. And it's like, no, if you really watch them, you see exactly what you're talking about. They were all kind of saying, this is ridiculous. Why am I going to stand up there in a vest, which I used to wear? And Todd Glass made fun of me. He and I both used to wear bad vests when I was on a show. He was like, oh, I got so many bad photos of vests, sweaters. I had bad sweaters, wow. Cosby sweaters.
They're probably on the wall of that Zanies in Nashville or Chicago, which has all of the, like, the first headshots of every comic you've ever seen, ever.
Yeah.
You're like, look, they're just a kid. Look at that. Bobby Slayton's a little kid in this picture. Yeah. He's just an angry little kid. Slayton.
It's funny. There's this kid.
The pit puppy of comedy. The pit bull puppy.
There's this kid, this younger kid that started doing comedy, has a pretty good show, but it's funny because he's younger than, like, a lot of the guys. Like, now there's, like, a younger generation than me, which feels weird. But, like, he made a joke about the way, like, the older guys dress, where he's like, it's like, hey, I got a hooded sweatshirt and some New Balance shoes. I guess I can be a comic in LA now.
Whoa, that's like,
holy
awesome.
Shit, that's fucking spot on.
You nailed us.
Yeah. Yes.
Who was that? I remember that.
It was the guy who runs, I'm bummed I can't remember his name, but he runs Power Violence, that great show on Sunday nights.
Oh, fuck.
Andy Wood?
No, not Andy Wood, who's also awesome, but yeah, it's that kid who runs Power Violence, who's an awesome, awesome guy. But
that's
like,
the thing, man, as we get older, we've been doing this, why you got to be careful that you're not falling into a whatever.
You think you're being cool, but you're not.
You're not. Yeah, yeah. You're an old man who's wearing skateboard shoes.
We have just a couple minutes left in this episode of the podcast, but just a really quickly, any films that you recommend, films that are coming out you're excited about, or just a good, how about a good deep film nerd vault watch, like a good sort of...
Jeez. Okay. I will say, I love talking about this movie, 13 Assassins, because I'm a samurai movie guy, and it was just a VOD, and now I think you can get it on, the DVD's available. It's an amazing, it's made by this Japanese director, Takashi Miike, who's done like 50 films, and it's like a classic Kurosawa-style samurai movie that came out this year, like a year ago or whatever. It's a great movie.
I remember hearing about it. I just didn't see it.
13 Assassins. It is awesome. Like, put that in your nerd vault, man. It is an amazing film.
Talking about Asian cinema, did you see The Devil. I saw The Devil.
No, I did not see that movie, but I heard it was amazing.
Yeah, it's really good.
That came out
last year.
Last year. Yeah, I heard
Or even, was it this year?
Speaking of Asian cinema, did you guys see Urotsuki Doji, the demon city where the demons rape people until they explode?
Speaking of Asian cinema, did you guys see Dark City?
Sleep now. I always love that read on that line. Say, okay, so the characters have to be weird and humanoid, but they have weird cadence. Sleep now.
And Kiefer Sutherland doing his best Renfield.
And the people have injected our souls
and Kiefer Sutherland
and our minds.
I've still
with
never
these.
Seen Dark City.
You haven't?
Oh, it's really cool.
It's a fun movie. It's really fun. I mean, like, you can definitely see that there are parts where they were like, this may not cut together exactly.
Didn't Ebert fucking love that movie and like do the commentary track back.
I love Dark City.
Ebert.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
I think Dark City is a fun movie, and it's a cool idea. And
I remember being a kid, and the trailer played twice in a row due to some error at the theater, and I vowed never to see it.
Really?
As a child.
It's time to let it go.
Every time I think about that movie, I always end up thinking about Children of the Lost, or City of the Lost Children.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a great, great movie.
That's an excellent movie.
But Dark City, what else you want? You got your Jennifer Connelly, you got your Rufus Sewell, you got...
I don't really go in for Jennifer Connelly movies where she's not going ass to ass. It's just a personal reference.
That movie, I got it.
Where
drugs
people don't
bad.
Get their arms amputated because of drug wounds.
Yeah, or throwing up because you're pumping something with a stick. I don't know what the Wayans guy was doing in there.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. So
the Wayans guy.
Yeah. I mean, Jennifer Connelly must have done 12 to 15 ass to ass movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Labyrinth, I think Labyrinth was one of them. Yeah, yeah, Labyrinth.
With Ludo.
Ludo. They just went ass to ass with that little fox character.
Ass to ass?
Excuse me, why are you...
Nothing. I smell nothing.
Is that a Muppet?
Just while Bowie was in the back, just like doing all that Michael Motion ball manipulation.
Yeah. Fushigi balls.
On Ludo's neck. Put your ass to ass. I'm going to fly to the Concord spit.
I'm 1980s Bowie from Labyrinth.
And your ass is shaking in a most peculiar way.
And the papers want to know whose ass you wear. We have covered a lot of ground.
From worse to ass, folks. Everything you need at the
Don't worry, kiddies. You thought it was going to be all heavy, but we brought it right back around ass to ass.
Buttholes save the series.
A little butthole slit kiss to wrap out this
slit kiss.
Nerdist rock block.
How did you become a classic rock DJ?
It happens. It happens more than you think.
It's the hard man at the witching hour.
Here's my favorite. Here's my favorite translation. Least favorite classic rock jock moment was going into ELO's Living Thing. Mm-hmm. And so in radio, there's this thing called the post, and the post is that beat right before the lyrics come in. And so classic radio said you would hit the post, so you'd be like, you know, 905 KLOS, it's a live! And then the music would come in. And then I worked at K-Rock in the 90s. They said, absolutely do not hit the post because that's too structured and we need to sound unstructured. So just talk until you're done talking and try to make it feel a little looser. But So after knowing that, this always drove me so crazy. It was the beginning of Livin' Thing. This in L.A., this DJ was like, hey, coming up here is ELO with Livin' Thing. And then you think he's done. And he's like, hey, stop talking about the contents of my fridge. It's a Livin' Thing. I was like, what did you just do? Why did you just wreak that upon humanity?
Bad food ELO joke.
I should talk to someone at Sirius, and what they should have a channel that is just a purposely bad, like, rock DJ.
Oh, that's a great idea.
I would just, if you're going to play those songs,
play the songs, but have the guy.
Because a percentage of people would appreciate that, just be like, oh, it's like the old days. And then the hipsters would be like, this is fucking awesome.
Exactly.
This is,
oh, my God.
A whole channel, like even the Morning Zoo.
Yeah.
It's like a parody.
When I first was on the road and would drive through some small Midwestern town, and that's all the radio stations I would get, I would listen to those guys at fucking 3 in the morning. That's why I said hard man at the witching hour, because I heard a guy say that once in Indiana. This is, whatever his name was, he was like, this is, you know, Captain Mike at the witching hour. Oh, now there's little Molly Hatchet. All right, or whatever. That guy's
wearing a denim vest with a fucking, has never shaved.
Some stinky radio room with like a pair of panties that
a skull ring with turquoise eyes.
It's the radio station from Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Or it's just the shitty Texas backwoods radio station.
That's it. That's the witching hour.
Oh, all right. So, Laughganistan, comedy film nerds, at Graham Elwood on the tweets.
Just go to GrahamElwood.com.
GrahamElwood.com.
You can get everything. Laughganistan, the podcast, comedy film nerds, all my Twitter, Facebook, everything at GrahamElwood.com.
When are you going to release an album, 21 Grams?
21 Grams is coming out next year. Actually, my new CD is coming out soon, Palm Strike Nichols. Dance Party.
What is it?
Palm
Strike Dance Party. I recorded a club dance song with your partner Mike Furman.
Natasha
Leggero. It's going to be amazing.
I cannot wait to hear that. It's not ready yet.
Not yet.
Shit.
Soon.
Get on it, Furman.
No, Furman. It's not Furman. He's done. It's me. I'm the idiot.
Get on it, Elwood.
Get on it, Elwood. You son of a.
All right. Thanks for being here, Graham Elwood.
Thank you, man.
And to everyone in the States and overseas. Fighting for America, fighting for the bigger cause, I say, enjoy your burrito, everybody.
It's a Livin' Thing.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.